Okay, so to now apply our discussion about mitzvos and kavana in mitzvos to specific mitzvos, not all the specific mitzvos, because that we could spend all year on, but the ones that are most interesting to us this year and now because of their connection to the Seder night. Just mention, though, that I had given you that ra'ah yesterday to look at. It's also just interesting to recap what he says in Brachos specifically, that there, in that context, to that Gemara, where the Gemara brings up mitzvah srichas kavana and kind of then pushes it away. I mentioned the other day, it's almost as if to preserve the mystery, that it shouldn't be settled by that one text. So the Gemara there had discussed the Mishnah, that if somebody is Kari B'Torah, reading the section of the Torah that contains Kriya Shema, and Higiyaz Man HaMikra, the time comes, Im Kivei Libo Yotze, that if he has Kavana, so then he is Yotze. So what exactly is that telling us? Apparently that you do need to have Kavana. So ultimately the Gemara addresses that. The Gemara says, oh, you see here, Mitzvah Shudas Kavana. And then it says, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the Kari Lehigia, that maybe he wasn't even meaning to be reading. So he needs to have, and it's also a discussion we've shown him what that means. That means he wasn't even reading properly, or he wasn't reading with any awareness of research reading to look for mistakes. That's also a significant difference. But there are comments that he says, we have to understand this Gemara in light of my opinion. He says that mitzvos, so what's going on here? So there he explains, really there's three different types of kavana that you could be talking about. You could be talking about not being misasik, that there should be some level of involvement. And there, that if you're misasik, so that wouldn't count for anything. That wouldn't be a significant action. If you're just going about your day and you don't even know you're doing anything, that's not going to count. And that's how some of the Rishonim, in addition to him, understand. And Rav Soloveitchik and his Shiurim and Brachos established that understanding also, that the idea of Kari Lehegia, if somebody was just reading to check for mistakes or something like that, so they didn't even have any awareness that he was doing anything, which is itself also a category that some of the Sfarim talk about. That maybe even when you don't need kavana l'shem mitzvah, you need kavana to be doing the action. That's another question of a distinction. If you're doing something, you don't even know that you're doing that thing. Like, you at least have, if a mitzvah is defined by a certain action, maybe you need to at least have kavana to be doing that thing, even without the concept of it being a mitzvah. Which is a part of what's brought into the discussion of Sira Sa'omer, the whole idea that we should have this chashash, as we talked about a little bit yesterday, that we should have this chashash, that if somebody asks you what day it is, that that should count as a mitzvah. So if we do assume mitzvah srichos kavana, and if we assume it conclusively, also as we discussed yesterday, the Shulchan Aruch leaves some room for doubt about that, but if we assume it conclusively, then why should we be worried? Clearly, the response does not come for the sake of a mitzvah. So it opens up the question of the other mitzvahs. Different mitzvahs have different standards. What is the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'omer? Maybe the mitzvah is just an amira, and therefore you intend to answer him, and therefore that should be enough. That's how some understand. Arguably, based on what we were saying yesterday from Soloveitchik, it should really come out differently, that amira is not really the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'omer. The mitzvah is really counting, just saying it. Not enough. You would probably think that when you respond to your friend who asks, you're really not having intention even to be doing the action, let alone l'shem mitzvah. So all of that seems to be a reasonable question. So here in the context of Kriya Shema, so the Ra'ah writes that if you don't have kavana, you're doing anything, so you're misasek, so then that's nothing. There are those who write, if you look at the footnotes over there, that some write that maybe for a Darabanan, Misasik might be enough, but for a Daraisa, not. Which is also an interesting discussion in light of what we had discussed about that. And so that's one, not being Misasik. Two is to know that you are doing a mitzvah. And three is kavana for the meaning of the words. So you should know what it is that you are saying, and you should be focused on that. And as some say, you shouldn't be focusing on anything else. It's a whole different type of kavana that might be specific for something like Kriya Shema and Tefillah. And he writes that that's where the question comes up, that maybe Kriya Shema has that extra need, and we want to know, do you have that or not? And it's not really clear from the Gemara what really would be the story about Kori Lehigia as far as the basic mitzvah. Is that considered a kavana for the mitzvah? It's interesting that the Ra'ah, despite his position of mitzvahs in Tzrichos Kavana, holds that Kori Lehigia wouldn't really count at all. While the Rambam doesn't seem to think like that. So that's just a few extra details about that. So what about the kavana for the mitzvahs of the Seder? So to get back to our issues. So what about, let's say, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? So you might say, well, that, not much of a question. Clearly I'm going to be doing Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim intentionally and with awareness. That's presumably the whole nature and the experience of the mitzvah. But there is an interesting discussion concerning the question of why is it that we don't make a bracha on that mitzvah specifically? Why is it that Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim does not have its own bracha? And one approach is quoted from the Avodah, or Avodah, question how to pronounce his name, Abu Dirham, and also the Pri Chodesh, and that is that you recite Kiddush at the Seder night, right? So when you recite Kiddush at the very beginning, so you said Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim, and Zecher L'Tzias Mitzrayim, maybe that's already a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Zecheras L'Tzias Mitzrayim and of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, because we don't know what the shir is. That's the surface understanding of this idea. We don't know what the shir of the mitzvah is. So if that's the case, maybe just a tiny bit is enough, and you're already yotze. So now it's too late to make the bracha. That's what it sounds like that explanation is putting forward. So what do you think of that possible approach? How does that strike you? That you can't make a bracha on Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim because you already made the reference, you already fulfilled it through the reference in Kiddush. Sam?
Perhaps you could have anti-kavana?
You could have anti-kavana, right? The question is, so why isn't that suggested? You've never heard anyone suggest that, right? So that's itself an interesting question. Do you have a recommendation of anti-kavana? But that itself is also something to explore a little bit more. What else could you say about this? What else strikes you about this possibility? Yeah, Zach?
I remember hearing from Shenter that for tzitzis and tefillin, as long as you're wearing your tefillin and mitzvah, so you can, as long as you're wearing it, you can still say the bracha.
Right, because there's still mitzvah left.
Yeah.
Right, so that's also an interesting question too. Now, why should this whole svara even apply here? Right, it's one thing when you have a mitzvah that has a defined amount. So then we could say you are, so to speak, yotze. Right, we talked a little bit about this whole language of yotze and mekayim. So yotze in the sense of you left the mitzvah. So then to make a bracha at that point is not productive, and it's not in compliance with brachos overly osios. But tzitzis and tefillin, we don't take that attitude, because we assume that tzitzis and tefillin are both mitzvah and shachas, and that the mitzvah is ongoing. That as long as you are wearing your four-cornered garment, you want to have your tzitzis on. And tefillin is a mitzvah that you could, maybe you should be doing all day. So even if you didn't catch it the opening minutes, but it's still relevant to the rest of it. So at least you're going to keep going with the mitzvah, so make the bracha for that. Which would be comparable in a sense to what we say by food when it comes to berachas hananin. So there also the bracha is supposed to be before you eat. And if you finish eating, so then there's no longer a zone for that bracha. But if you're halfway through, so you still want to make the bracha before the rest of the food. So if you ate already and you didn't make a bracha, so then okay, what's done is done. But if you still have food left, the bracha should be the rest of the food. So for the mitzvah also, that's a mitzvah nimshaches, like tzitzis and tefillin, so then there's room for that. So what Zach is maybe suggesting is presumably Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is on the same level, right? That there is an ongoing fulfillment, because they're called Hamarbe Hareza Meshubach. It's not that you're just keeping going after you've already done. That's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to keep talking about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it seems also a little bit harder to say that you're done, and that to make the bracha now was pointless. What else do you note about that? Yeah, all right.
Presumably, you're not being having to discuss the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim yet. We're still saying your yotze, and presumably, they are of the opinion that you would indeed need a bracha for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which maybe is against the view we discussed earlier before Pesach about the bracha being the component to the bracha is impossible.
Right. So this is an additional idea, right? So that, let's take 2 points at one at a time. Like your second point first. You're saying that we mentioned another approach, a similar approach, that's saying we can't make a bracha just because separate from Kiddush, the bracha itself would constitute the fulfillment. So you'd be done by the time you finish. Which also overlaps with some of these problems, but not all of them. The issue of Kiddush and not having Kavanah, so Sam had recommended, why don't you have negative Kavanah on purpose. So really this is where this whole idea kind of comes to the forefront here. That the notion that you could be in fulfillment of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the more so, with Kiddush that happens to reference it. So that is premised on the idea that you don't need Kavanah, so therefore it would be done. But it might even be more than that. It might really be less than Kavanah. And you might say it's even closer to negative Kavanah. So Sam said you should have negative Kavanah. And I responded, do you necessarily know of anybody doing that on purpose? But you could think that this is actually closer to negative Kavanah by itself. Why? Because every Friday night you make the Kiddush. And you say this phrase all the time. Many, many times a year. So in those contexts, you're not associating it with the Seder mitzvah at all. So to say that all of a sudden now, without your trying to do so, right, you're certainly not going to actively try to do so, because why you want to cause that problem. And to say that it's on any level what you're intending to do, and this is the same act that you do 98% of the time, outside of this context, that already might be something like negative Kavanah. So at best you've got a very low level of Kavanah here, and your point about mitzvah nimshaches is a good point as well. And what about also the assumption that we've touched upon a little bit, that there is a difference between Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is a daily obligation, a twice daily obligation, and Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the unique Seder night obligation and has more demands. And what exactly are the scope of those demands? As we discussed a little bit, the idea of the give and take, of the Shailu Tshuva, and of going into the details. but it's got to be at least something different than more than Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. So just saying those words, it's an interesting notion to think that that might also fulfill Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim really on any level. And that's also separate from what we discussed before Yatif, you know, the Gamliel, that there do seem to be some basic requirements of Pesach Matzah Mar. We talked then about, is that a din in Haggadah, or is that a din in those mitzvahs? And in fact, there are some who brought a raya from the Sabuzrav that, okay, it sounds like it's not a din in Haggadah. But conversely, you might say it's actually a raya against this idea, that it seems like, at a minimum, there is a certain basic requirement of what Haggadah requires, and that's not it. So all of this makes this position kind of difficult. Rav Asher Weiss has a discussion about this. He has, he recently, in the past few years, came out with a very popular sefer on Klalei HaMitzvos. He mentioned yesterday that in the Shulchan Aruch and in Shas, you don't have any place where they're just going to sit down and say, okay, here are the basic rules that all the dinim fit into. We just have the dinim, and then we have to figure out what the klolim are from the examples. But there were those who wrote svarim on klolim, among them in Prim Megadim, and Chayadam has a section where he goes through all these basic klolim. So some wrote svarim based on that section of the Chayadam. So recently, Rav Asher Weiss, past 2-3 years, Rav Asher Weiss came out with a sefer on the klolim, and he has a long section on Kavana. So he talks about these details also in the context of this issue of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Sabadram and the Brichadash. So he suggests, he thinks maybe the whole interpretation is actually different. He doesn't think that the Abadram necessarily has to mean that you are Yotze, the mitzvah, with the bracha that's in Kiddush, and therefore there's no bracha. But he suggests that maybe what it means is that Kiddush, Seder night, does double duty. And that it is also the bracha for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That because it contains that language integrated into it, so it itself is the bracha. Which is a very different kind of explanation. Not saying that it accomplishes the mitzvah and therefore there's no room for a bracha. Saying that it is the bracha for the mitzvah, so we don't need an extra bracha on top of the Kiddush because it serves that purpose. And one comparison, as he notes there, is we have this idea also with daily Kriya Shema. That when it comes to Kriya Shema, we don't recite a bracha on the mitzvah. And some of the Rishonim, the Rush and the first in the brachas, quotes from Rav Amram Gong, that the reason we don't have a bracha on Kriya Shema is because it's included in what we call Berachos Kriya Shema. But Berachos Kriya Shema, those tefillos that surround Kriya Shema, it's not really a bracha like a Berachos HaMitzvah, it's really a tefila that Chazal put to surround Kriya Shema. But Rav Amram says it also serves the purpose of being a Berachos HaMitzvah on Kriya Shema. So therefore, Rav Amram said, we don't follow this halacha, but when you say Kriya Shema separately, let's say, because you're repeating it later on at night, and you're saying it outside the context of Ma'ariv, so Rav Amram said, then you should make a bracha, Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosu V'Tzivanu Al Mitzvos Kriya Shema. Okay, we don't do that, practically speaking, but that's reflected this idea that the bracha that we have there with another purpose, also could double up as the Berachos HaMitzvah. So, Rav Asher suggests that maybe that's what's going on here also, that what the Abadram means is that Kiddush at the Seder also serves as the bracha on the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which would settle a lot of these questions. You know, would work better with a lot of these concerns, doesn't necessarily then mean anything about Kavana or about what the minimal standard is for Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, or have to address the differences between Sipur and Zechira. So on a lot of levels, it probably works a lot better. Also probably affects the issue we talked about a few months ago about Kiddush having to wait until dark the Seder night. That even though every other Shabbos or Yontif we could theoretically make Kiddush earlier when it's still light outside, the Seder we have to wait. So also understanding that Kiddush has a connection to the mitzvah of Super Yetzias Mitzrayim of the night adds another element to that. So it's elegant for all those reasons. He goes on to note, though, that that might be the Pshat and the Midrash, and the Pri Chodesh, with his similar approach, it's more clear that he means to say that the mitzvah was fulfilled in the Kiddush. So you're still left all those questions for the Pri Chodesh. But as far as the Midrash's version of it, he thinks maybe that could be a theory. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so with that, so now let's turn to one of the other major elements of the Seder, where Kavana has become, in recent centuries, a topic of much discussion. And in particular, the whole notion that we've seen of a Tanai in Kavana. And that has to do with the mitzvah of Afikomen, and a suggestion of the Avnei Nezer, his Chuvos, that Tnai play a role in that particular din. Now, the notion of Tnai b'mitzvos is something that we touched upon a little bit, and we saw that it would seem to connect very strongly to this idea of mitzvos Srichos Kavana or mitzvos Lav Srichos Kavana, and that there were two different versions of it. That if you say mitzvos Srichos Kavana, so then the idea being that you have control to turn on the Kavana or turn it off, and therefore you could get to negative Kavana. So negative Kavana, maybe that could disqualify a mitzvah, and you could turn that on and off conditionally. It's a couple of chidushim on top of each other. Or that even if you say mitzvos ein srichos kavana, that's only because of the default wiring. But if you have this negative kavana, or even conditional negative kavana, you can undo the default wiring. So coming from that, we get this whole idea of a tanai in mitzvos. And the Shulchan Aruch seems to accept it, as we saw in the context of Sfiras HaOmer. When it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, so we discussed yesterday, so what happens if the shul is it's after Plag HaMincha, too early, so what should you do to hedge your bets? So you should count with no bracha, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, and count with a bracha later. And one interpretation, we mentioned in Salvechik a different interpretation, but one interpretation is that's an example of Tanai B'mitzvos. So that's a whole questionable concept, even if the Shulchan Aruch accepts it. And we saw that it has to be built on a number of points. And some raise the objection that doesn't really follow the rules of Tanai. That the whole notion that you can do anything conditionally has a number of rules to it. So, first of all, the Gemara in Ksuvos, which we mentioned at our time finding, Gemara in Ksuvos and Nivamos, tells us that there is a standard for when Tanai is possible and when it's not possible. And that is Kol Milsa de Less of a Shlichos Lack of a Tanai. That anything that cannot be done through agency, through appointing someone else, is not susceptible to conditions, to a Tanai. So here, when it comes to mitzvos, so some mitzvos work with shlichus, and some don't. So counting Sfiras HaOmer, for example, that doesn't work through shlichus. You can't just say to someone else, I plan on forgetting, so I appoint you to count Sfira for me. So why should a Tanai work? Or the other mitzvahs, like we'll talk about here. So very often, they're what we call a mitzvah shebegufo, a mitzvah that you do personally. So how's a Tanai going to come in there? And separate from that, doesn't a Tanai normally have to be spoken? Doesn't have to be verbal? And we have rules called the Mishpatei HaTanayim. There are conditions of Tanayim. A Tanai has to mention both possibilities. It's called Tanai Kafel. So, how does all of this fit? So, this is a discussion the Achronim, the Tzufei Frank, and others talk about this. And among the suggestions they have is that there's different kinds of Tanayim. That when you have a Tanai that is in the business context, or involves other people, involves a transaction between other people, so then you have these conditions. And the idea, the association of Shluchos and Tanai, presumably doesn't mean that Tanai is in any way really connected to Shluchos as a mechanism. It means that they share a common element, that it's about control. Often said, right, that here, halachically, it's about control. That the idea that you can appoint an agent to do something on your behalf shows a certain amount of control over the situation. And it's in those situations that you also can decide whether it's going to happen or not happen, decide whether it's going to take effect or not based on circumstances. But if you don't have that level of control, so then you don't have the ability to make a tnai either. But maybe when we're talking about mitzvos, it's overlapping language, but we don't mean it the same way. And that especially if it's a function of kavana, and a need for mitzvos to reflect your intent, so maybe you can make your intent in a complicated way. And it's not necessarily the same kind of situation like when you make a Tanai ben Adam l'chavero. If you say, I'm going to sell you this on the condition that XYZ happens. Or if somebody says, I'm going to marry you, I'm going to ask that this is true or that that is true. So then you have all kinds of rules for how that Tanai is going to take effect or not take effect when somebody else is part of the discussion. But here we're not talking about a tnai coming from the same halachos there. We're talking about something that's just a function of the whole notion of mitzvah srichos kavana, or what it would mean to say in srichos kavana. And maybe the nature of the kavana is subject to being complicated, is something that you can manipulate to a certain degree. So that is important to appreciate as we consider how this impacts different mitzvahs. So far, so good. Everybody with me? So, why is this relevant to the question of afikomen? So, you may or may not be familiar with a often quoted idea of the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer, as we've mentioned many times, Sach Chav Rebbe, always a fascinating thinker. So in his tshuvas, a relatively short tshuva for one that's subject to so much discussion, so Simen Shinpei He, no, Shinpei Aleph, Shinpei Aleph Os He, at the end is where he makes this point, but the whole tshuva is relevant, Shinpei Aleph. So he's really motivated by something else. So he's trying to figure out, says, why the lashon of the bracha on matzah and maror is the way that it is. So we spoke a lot about maror and whether there is a mitzvah of achila or not, and what can be gleaned from the bracha. And we talked for extra synergy earlier in the year about the Gemara and Daf Zayin and the different implications of a bracha that's made on al and a bracha that's made le, whether it's mitzvos that involve shluchim again, if a mitzvah that can be done by somebody else, or a mitzvah that reflects more of a floating time period. So why do we make the bracha al achilas matzah? Why don't we say lechol matzah? You hear the question? What's the svara to say, according to all the different distinctions that we had between al and le, why should matzah and maror have a al formulation, al achilas, matzah. Now, what happens to be is he notes that there are some Rishonim that actually do have the Gersa that it should be Lechol Matzah. But that's not our Gersa. It's not our Gersa in the Gemara. So according to us, why do we have Al Achilas Matzah? Why is that the tax? Levi, are you suggesting something?
I think it's something passive versus active.
Mm-hmm. That definitely is an element, right? So how are you seeing eating matzah as passive?
Eating matzah not for the mitzvah.
But when you make the bracha, you are planning on eating it for the mitzvah, right? So why is that any more passive than any other mitzvah that you do?
Not exactly sure.
Yeah, it's a tough question, right? It's not so easy. So there are a couple of approaches. So it's an issue. Again, some Rishonim don't have that nusach, but according to this nusach, it seems difficult, and they're a very clearly not a mitzvah you can do with shlichus. Right? So you can't have somebody else eat matzah for you. So the Avnei Nezer suggests that the nature of the mitzvah of matzah, and this gets into the whole question of where Afikomen fits in, and this is something we'll also expand upon a little bit tomorrow, but just to get this theory out there, says that the idea that there is significant to chatzos, right, that we associate that matzah with the eating of the Korban Pesach. And it's machlokas, Blazer ben Azaria, and Rabbi Akiva, as to when the time for the Korban Pesach is. So according to Blazer ben Azaria, that it's at chatzos, and that this is based on the Gzeirah Shava to when the Makos Bechoros was. So you know it's difficult, because how do you establish the mitzvah then? And Chatzos is a split second. And to say that that's when the mitzvah was, that's very difficult, practically and conceptually. So it suggests, rather, that the idea is that when Chatzos comes, according to Blazer ben Azaria, you should have the taste of the Pesach and Matzah in your mouth. So it's not actually, that timing doesn't mean that you should be eating it then. It means that you should be in a state of having eaten it by that point. So if that's the case, he says, therefore it's more of a state of being rather than an action. And so the language of Al is more fitting. That we're saying that we Shekh Hashanah is also Mitzivanu to be in a state of having eaten matzah when Chatzos comes. It's a very interesting kind of idea. And to get there, he actually compares it to another one of our topics this year, to Bir Chametz. That when we make the bracha, so we do Bedikas Chametz, we make a bracha, and we understand that the bracha is on Bir Chametz rather than Bedika, because Bedika is for the purpose of Bir. And that's what also prompts the Gemara to talk about what the Nusach of the bracha should be. But among the aspects of making the bracha of the language of Al Bir Chametz, because the point of Bir Chametz is that you should be on Pesach without your Chametz. So therefore, it's not really a focus on the moment right now that you are doing an act of destruction of chametz. It's that you want to be in a state of no chametz coming into Pesach. So therefore, the language of Al is more fitting for that kind of a structure. And so too, he says, the Big Kiddush, he says that therefore, when Chatzos comes, you want to have the tam of the Pesach and Matzah in your mouth, and that's why the language is the way it is. So, having said that, having come from that premise, so then he drops his big suggestion just in the last paragraph there, and it's hey, it should pay off. And tomorrow, it'll probably be good to see this inside, because we're going to analyzed a little further. He says, based on all of that, he says, I have an Eitzah. So sometimes we know, especially, you know, writing as the Chassidish Rebbe, you kind of have this tension a little bit more between your enthusiasm and the rigid structure sometimes of mitzvahs, you know, the whole question of mani tefillah and the like. So that's a question in general, but Pesach night, I think we all can relate to this a little bit more, that, you know, we have this notion of kol marbeh, we want to have a very elaborate, extensive Seder, and already we started relatively late, as we discussed. It's also a problem, so you want to have a long Seder, starting late, and you also want to finish your afikomen by chatzos, so that puts you in a little bit of a straitjacket, right? It puts you in a very tight space. So very often people are conflicted because of that. So suggest the Avinezer, he says, if you are in the middle of your Seder meal, and you really have a lot still to go, but you see that Chatzos is approaching. So he suggests, here's what you could do. He says, so we have this machlokes with Lazar and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, what this man is. But according to Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah, so the Zman is Chatzos. But he assumes that the Isser of eating after the Afikomen, you saw the very brief Mishnah today of Eim Aftir and Acher HaPesach Afikomen, that Isser is during the Zman of the Mitzvah, you shouldn't have anything else that will compete with the taste. But after the Zman is over, then it shouldn't be a problem. So his suggestion is that if, when the Chatzos is about to arrive, have some matzah then, and have intent that if the halacha is like the Blazer ben Azariah, so that's why I want to have it now in order to have the tam matzah before when Chatzos comes. But it's also going to be defined by that. It's going to be bounded by that. So after Chatzos is over, I should be able to keep eating. So I can then go back to my meal, because the two double impact of this is that, yes, I need to get it by Chatzos, but it means that after Chatzos, the clock restarts. So I would be able to keep on eating if indeed the Zman of the Mitzvah is defined by Chatzos. And if it's not, so then in order to account for the other possibility, so then when I actually do finish my meal, so then I'll have another Afikomen at the end. And I will employ a T'nai system in order to make both of those work. If the halacha is like one, it'll be this way. If the halacha is like the other, it'll be that way. So this is the often debated and discussed T'nai of the Avinezer. There are many people who utilize this in practice because, again, it is a relatable issue. You know, wanting to get the Chatzos deadline, but also still having much Seder left to do. So this is something that's very much a actively discussed and implemented tool. And yet, as we'll see, there's much to debate about it. Are you have a thought or question?
Yeah, is this actually a T'nai? It just sounds like you're covering both your bases. If it's eating matzah with the taste in your mouth by Chatzos, then cover, eat matzah then, and if it's then, then I will then eat matzah then. Why would we get T'nai to call both
Jesus? Okay, very good point. So as we'll see, tomorrow we'll have to go into a little bit more about this. But as we'll see, one of the objections and not objections. You know, there are some who object this for various reasons. And there are some who object from the other side of it, essentially like you're saying, that, yeah, do that and don't call it a T'nai. That you don't necessarily need the whole discussion of mitzvah srichas kavana and that and whether T'nai works. Just have matzah at those two stages and the mele will accomplish what you're trying to go for. So, as we'll see tomorrow, we'll flesh this out a little bit and some of the literature, Moshe Feinstein at the Tshuva, as we'll see, many others, is a topic of much analysis. And it goes also to the question of what Afikomen is. So we will take the opportunity to also address, even though it's skipping to the end of the Masechta, but just to keep things thematically, consistent. So we'll also explore just the concept of Afikomen during this discussion. But that's what we'll have to explore tomorrow. So first of all, does this work as some question? And from the other direction, like Ari is saying, maybe you don't even need it. Maybe you don't even need to call it anything fancy. Just do it, and it doesn't necessarily require reliance on the whole notion of Tanai and Kavana, etc. So all of this, Be'ez Hashem, we'll explore tomorrow. If there are more Makaris on the list you haven't seen yet, it would be good to see them. But also, if you have some time, I would recommend seeing the Ebenezer Inside. It's available on the shelves and available on HebrewBooks.org. It's very much out there, so it should be hard to access. It is, again, Simon Shin Pei Aleph in Or HaChaim. The part of the suggestion is the last paragraph. That's Os Hey, but the whole tshuva is not so long. The beginning of the tshuva, he's talking about this question of why the bracha is what it is, and then the last paragraph is where he has that suggestion. Whole thing is worth reading if you have some time tomorrow. Okay, so I wish you all a wonderful day. It should be only good things. And look forward to seeing you then.